I've got Dr. Lebeau with me, and we had had a prior interview with earlier, about a month or two ago, when it was played, although it had been several months since we had the interview. But let me find my notes here. Okay. And Dr. Lebeau is a graduate of Albert Einstein College and of Medicine, 1970, who believes passionately in the right of Americans to choose their own health paths. She has practiced drug-free natural medicine for 35 years by seeking the underlying cause of every illness and ailment and treating that root cause. She believes in using nutrients and other natural options to find, define, and treat the problems which underlie degenerative chronic diseases and poor aging while supporting the immune and other crucial systems. She's enjoyed remarkable success with a wide assortment of cataclysmic problems. Dr. Lebeau is president of Neurotherapy Certification Board, and which she helped establish in order to strengthen and develop the field of neurobiofeedback, bring it into widespread use as a powerful non-toxic tool for modern medicine. Because of Dr. Lebeau's awareness of the powerful natural non-toxic options available to treat and underlying cause of disease, she's focused on maintaining these choices for all Americans. Based on her understanding of the impact of poor nutrition and chemical pesticide toxicity in the declining health of America, Dr. Lebeau is determined to help Americans maintain the choices that allow them to protect themselves from disease and toxic harm. Okay, now, is your husband, Dr. Stubblebine, available too this evening, or?
He's actually General Stubblebine, and he's available.
What did I say? I'm sorry.
All right.
When things start going wrong, it just takes me a few minutes to get myself back in order here. So, would you like to go ahead and tell us anything more about your foundation and what you're all about?
I sure would. I'd be very happy to. The foundation is called the Natural Solutions Foundation, and it's focused on finding natural solutions to the things that are threatening our health or our health freedom. What's threatening our health? Well, for one thing, the FDA is. The FDA has been engaged in a war on nutrients, nutrition, and health information. Many people do not know that the FDA actually prosecutes and arrests people at the point of a gun for telling the truth, scientifically validated truth, about nutrients and about the health benefits that you can expect from food and food components like vitamins, minerals, herbs, etc. As a matter of fact, right now, there is a man named Stephen Hewer who is in jail because he dared tell people scientifically validated information about how nutrients made by his company, Chrysalis, could actually help them live happier and healthier lives. The FDA says that it is illegal in the United States to provide information about the biological effectiveness of any nutritional substance in terms of preventing, treating, mitigating, or curing any disease or condition. That is thought fascism. And it's illegal, of course, under the Constitution, but that apparently has no real meaning in the United States at the moment. Another thing that threatens our health is compulsory vaccination. The pharmaceutical industry makes very little money unless lots and lots of people have vaccinations as part of their illness care. I happen to have been trained as a physician, and at the time that I was educated, although I was skeptical about a great many things in my medical education, I did believe that vaccinations had eliminated the epidemic diseases and the infectious diseases, and that they were very useful strategies in public health. I've since had the scales fall from my eyes because I've looked at the science. I've looked at the reality of the assertions and find that the science of virology is basically a large and very, very well-financed scam. It is a non-science, in spite of the fact that we like to believe in it because it seems so very, very scientific. For instance, I'm old enough so that when polio vaccines, both the oral or the injectable forms, became available, it was hailed as a world-changing revolutionary event for the installation of good health around the world. The fact is that the polio virus was never isolated. To this day, no one knows if there is such a thing as a polio virus. And what we call polio is probably a result of pesticide poisoning, pesticides like DDT, which, like many other children of my generation, I used to frolic in the white dust of when the DDT trucks rolled down the street. Well, you get enough of that in your body, and the enzyme systems can't tolerate it, and you develop paralysis and other symptoms. I didn't know that when I went to medical school. I thought it was a fine thing to vaccinate my child, who is now 34 years old, not such a child. But there were only a few vaccines, and as I've looked deeper and deeper into the vaccine industry and the vaccine fraud, what I see is that it is indeed a poisoning of the world for many purposes. In my mind, there is no doubt that mercury is one of the many causes of the horrific and tragic increase of autism in this modern generation. And yet the United States government recently re-voted to unspend the $60 million that it had decided to spend to look into the connection between mercury and autism. I will mention that the vaccines so, quote, generously contributed, end quote, by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to the children of Africa and India and the poor children of the world, those vaccines happen to contain twice as much thimerosal, twice as much mercury, as vaccines given to American children, and we can see what the results are. The results are one boy in 60, 6-0 in New Jersey, is autistic because of vaccines and other toxins.
Are they wise to that in other parts of the world where they're getting those vaccinations?
Mothers who see the teams coming take their children and run. Yes, they're wise to it. I'm wise to the fact that compulsory vaccination is coming toward you very rapidly wherever you live. If you live in New Jersey, it's already on the books. If you live in other states, it's coming toward you because vaccine manufacturers who are protected and coddled by the federal government and by the regulatory agencies because there's so much money to be spread around by them, these industries own legislative activities, and so they want everybody to have vaccines. Girls have to have Gardasil. Now boys are being targeted to have Gardasil vaccinations to protect an organ they do not even possess, the cervix. And yet the FDA knows full well, and I have the documentation, before the release of Gardasil, it was known that the four viruses that Gardasil supposedly protects against do not, I repeat, do not cause cervical cancer. They cause benign, self-limited infections of no consequence to the people who have them. And the Gardasil injections are themselves related to a 44.9% increase in cervical cancer in women and girls who get Gardasil. Now, why would anybody give women and girls cancer? Very simple. Cancer is the single most productive disease that has ever, ever been encountered by the human species. Our foundation and our website, by the way, is www.healthfreedomusa.org. That's healthfreedomusa.org. Our foundation has a newsletter. The newsletter is called the Health Freedom Action E-Alerts because these dangers, and there are many more, like genetically modified food, I'll talk about that in a moment, these dangers are being thrust upon us, and we have to push back. We have to push back effectively, and that's what our organization does. We are the largest health freedom organization in the world, 193,000-plus people strong. Sorry, today it's up to 194,000 people. And those 194,000 people are what we call our mouse warriors. They ride the freedom mouse. And using the click of a mouse, we set it up so you can send emails where they need to go. You can not take ineffective action like internet petitions. They do nothing. They make you feel good, but they don't accomplish anything. On the other hand, we have targeted email campaigns, and we have information campaigns that actually do have an effect, and we have been astonishingly effective. We are campaigning very hard on a global basis to eliminate genetically modified foods, at the very least, to have them mandatorily labeled. Many people do not know that genetically modified foods contaminate upwards of 90% of the food that Americans eat. Why should you care? Well, we all know about the AIDS epidemic in Africa. We all know about the tragedy of that, and some of us are aware that it may not be an accident that there is an AIDS epidemic. But what most people do not know is that the marker for HIV is that the CD4 immune cells, the white cells known as CD4 cells, decline below a particular level, below 200 is the number. And once that decline has taken place, then you're looking at a case of HIV. If it goes further, you're looking at a case of AIDS, which is the more developed form. Now, in Africa, the United States government has been pushing Monsanto's white corn, or maize as it's called there. And one of the things that Monsanto's white corn does, it's genetically modified corn, is it knocks out the CD4 cells. Knock out enough of them, patients die with the symptoms of HIV. So is it possible that the genetically modified corn that is approved in Africa and has been pushed on all the African countries is in fact what's responsible for the so-called HIV epidemic? Is it possible? Yes, it's very possible. Now, what about your food? Does it contain genetically modified corn? Oh, yes, it does. Does it contain genetically modified soy? Oh, yes, it does. Does it contain genetically modified potatoes and sugar and papayas and so on? Unless you're eating a 100% organic diet, you know that it does. And you might say, well, so what? Well, sterility. The Austrian government has finally confirmed what independent scientists have been showing, and that is that genetically modified foods reduce the ability of an animal species, and we are an animal species, to reproduce. Genetically modified foods increase cancer. And by the way, so do vaccines, which are contaminated with leukemia and other cancer-causing viruses, and have been known by the FDA to be contaminated with these viruses for 40 years. We have documentary proof.
Dr. Lebeau, I mean, you can go on and on and on about all these different ways that we're being inundated with foods and vaccination.
Yes, I can.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, unless people understand why, I wouldn't connect the dots until I understood why. And my understanding at this point is that, I mean, when you ask somebody, and I do this a lot, I go, well, do you feel there's too many people on this earth? I'm amazed at how many people will answer that question, yes. Well, guess what their methods they're using to do that, to rid the planet of those people.
That's correct. First, they weaponize food, which is a very, very potent way, because everybody has to eat. If you go to our website, healthfreedomusa.org, and scroll down in the central section, you'll come to the videos, and you'll see one called Nutricide, N-U-T-R-I-C-I-D-E, Nutricide, which means two things. It's a word I made up, so I gave it two definitions, because it's my word. The first definition is the death of the body of knowledge associating health and food, and I talked about that a little bit earlier on. And the second is the death of large populations through the manipulation of the food supply. And you will see that the Codex Alimentarius Commission, which is the International Food Rules Trade Commission, which the United States dominates, and which the industries, the food and pharmaceutical and chemical industries dominate through the FDA, you will see that Codex Alimentarius came out of the mind of a German war criminal who was languishing in jail for a very short time after the Second World War, following the Nuremberg War Tribunals. And he said, well, that didn't work. What else can we do? Oh, yes, food. We could weaponize food and control who lives and who dies. And that program was taken on by the United Nations after he got out of jail and went back to work as the head of Bayer Pharmaceutical, and has been installed and functioning, controlling every aspect of food, everything that goes into your mouth except drugs, since 1962 through the United Nations. Well, that program is designed to weaponize food, and genetically modified food, for instance, is a weaponized version of food, and reduce the population. Why? Very simple. As a physician, I had a head of state come to me for treatment, and she brought her family with her for treatment, too, to my offices in 2002-2003. And she said to me one day, she was a nice, chatty sort of lady, and she said to me, you know, I was raised to believe that it was necessary to cleanse the world of useless eaters. I will repeat.
Was she related to Henry Kissinger?
Indeed. And she said, I'm not so sure that's actually the right thing to do. Well, at least she was having doubts. And I said to her, why would you want to do that? And she said to me, well, because they, and of course she means us, you know, you and I and our kids and our relatives, and we're all useless eaters, they are consuming our non-renewable resources. And I said to her, did it ever occur to you that you are consuming their non-renewable resources? And she looked at me with genuine surprise in her eyes, and she said, well, that's a very interesting idea.
Okay, Dr. Lebeau, since our timing's a little bit off since we got started late, but I still have to do my station identification or whatever. So this is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community supported radio. And this is Truth Quest with Melody. And I've got Dr. Rima Lebeau on the, for this evening, for a good interview on what's going on with Codex Alimentarius and how it affects our food and genetic GMO foods and vaccinations and numerous things like that. But I'd also like to say that it will be archived on www.givemesometruth.info. So if anybody wants to go back at another time to listen to it, that's where it will be. And it is streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And so go ahead, Dr. Lebeau.
So these people do not see the need for all of us. And they do not understand, or they do not want to understand, that the most effective way for reducing population that has ever been found in the world, except for wholesale slaughter and genocide, which does get rid of people, the most effective way is very simple. It's to educate women, whether it's a Muslim culture or a Christian culture or a Jewish culture or an animist culture, whatever it is. You educate women, and shazam, the quality of life in the community goes up, and the number of children that women have goes down. That seems to me like a very good alternative to genocide. But then again, I may be just an old-fashioned sort of girl. Now, on our site, www.healthfreedomusa.org, we have an enormous amount of information, and it's all there for you to disseminate, for you to share. There are no copyrights on it. We have only, or I should say there are no copy wrongs. We have only copyrights. It's right to copy it as long as you give us full attribution. And we also encourage you to disseminate information to your communities. We ask you to take action with your mouse, with your freedom mouse, and become the voice of change and the voice of reason. One of the things that we have to do, I've been talking a lot about food as a health threat. One of the things that we have to do is reclaim the production of food. Now, in my medical practice, I look for the underlying cause, and I've practiced drug-free medicine, by the way, and psychiatry, drug-free medicine and psychiatry, for the best part of 40 years. I graduated, as you said, in 1970 from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And I realized that it made no sense to poison enzyme systems, which is what all drugs do, all of them. It made no sense to poison enzyme systems when enzymes are the very stuff of life in order to make people well, because all that poisoning an enzyme system does is make trouble and mean that you have side effects or effects, and you have to then give another drug generally to compensate for the poisoned enzyme system, which wouldn't be there if we didn't need it. So I said, no, this makes no sense. I'm not going to do this. And I started looking for other better ways to help people, and I found lots of them.
Now, can I ask you on your the schooling that you got? Now, is that your typical AMA schooling background, or was this natural medicine school?
Oh, I got typical AMA allopathic, okay. Insane medical training.
Okay,
and it made no sense to me.
Okay,
because the way my mind is wired, and I had quite a lot of difficulty with my medical school professors, of course. The way my mind is wired is to ask not how, which is the kind of plumber level question, but why, which I thought was a much more interesting and elegant way to ask how things work and why things work. And then, if I understood why, I figured out how would come pretty easily. But allopathic medicine is only about how. It's not about why. It's about how to suppress symptoms. It's about how to make money. Because what most people don't realize is that our entire allopathic medical system was created through the agency of John D. Rockefeller, who owned the world's oil output. And he decided, incorrectly as it turns out, that the internal combustion engine, the automobile, would never use the world's oil supply that he could produce. And he needed an alternative consumer system, something that would use up the petroleum that he was producing. And he realized that the drugs of that time, and we're talking about the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century, the drugs of that time were petroleum-based derivatives, coal tar derivatives. And so he sent his agents to Germany to purchase the entire pharmaceutical industry, which was at that time the organic chemistry industry. And he then realized that he needed a distribution system. So he gave, quote, generously, $1 million to each state to set up an allopathic medical school in the land-grant college each state has, and $1 million to Harvard and $1 million to Yale. And then he gave another $1 million. And remember, we're talking about 1898, 1901. That's an enormous amount of money.
Wasn't he kind of the person that set up the non-governmental organizations? Is that where they came from?
There have been non-governmental organizations for a long time, but he certainly used them just as he used Planned Parenthood, just as he used the women's movement, just as he used progressive education to engineer society to be what he wanted it to be. But to very quickly finish the allopathic medical story, he gave each state $1 million to set up a medical board in order to criminalize doing anything except practicing drug-based medicine, and they did so. And he commissioned the Flexner Report, along with his friend Andrew Carnegie, in order to demonize anything except allopathic drug-based medicine. Very quickly, he bought the legislatures and he bought the structures that he needed or created them. And within just a few years, there were no other legitimate physicians left except allopathic physicians. Allopathic physicians, before this time, had been the ones that nobody wanted to go to because they hurt people, they killed people, they used caustics and purgatives, and they did horrible things to people. And if they could, people would prefer to go to homeopaths and eclectics and naturopaths and osteopaths and chiropractors and herbalists and so on. But those guys were all put out of, and women were all put out of business. And that's where we get the standard allopathic medical system. Well, I didn't know that when I went to medical school, but I saw the insanity and the inanity of what I was being taught. It made no sense to me. It was basically high-level stupidity, and I tried to point that out to my professors, who were not at all amused. That's another story for another interview, but the point is I did manage to graduate from a medical school, and I did manage to get my license, and I said, I will not harm my patients. I'll do something else. And I found that there were wonderful ways to help patients, whether it was psychiatry that we were talking about, or general medicine, or healing chronic degenerative diseases like cancer and cardiovascular disease, stroke, obesity, diabetes, autoimmune disorders like MS. Wonderful things that could be done, but none of them are profitable for the pharmaceutical industry. Now, we have the right, every one of us, to make those choices if we want them. If somebody wants drugs and vaccines and side effects and so on, and it doesn't bother them that the leading cause of death, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, in the United States is properly used drugs. I'll say that again. The leading cause of death in the United States and in the developed world is properly used drugs.
And that's the one they document. A lot of them don't get documented.
This is absolutely documented. The things that I say are documented, or I don't say them.
What I meant was there's a lot of deaths that don't go getting documented that die from those medications, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. But these are the documented deaths. Yes, you're quite right. And so if people want those things, you know, if that makes them happy, then by all means, go ahead and poison yourself. But on the other hand, we should have the right, we who know better, we who are better informed and able to protect our health better, we should have the right to make our decisions about how we want to use our bodies and what we want to have happen to them and our children's bodies in the way that free people do. Because let me point something out. A person whose body is owned by another person is called a slave. If somebody else decides what happens to your body, can you be called a free person? I think not. If you have to get vaccines, and by the way, there's a compulsory adult vaccination schedule coming. You watch, in the next year or two, you'll start hearing about how adults should be compulsorily vaccinated for this and that and the other thing. When we start adding up the reality that vaccines do not eliminate the diseases that they're supposed to, that most epidemics occur in fully vaccinated populations, that chickens around the world which are developing avian flu, are chickens that have been vaccinated for avian flu. That backyard flocks do not develop avian flu. It's the vaccinated chickens that do.
So do you think they're giving us flu with the flu vaccines in?
Absolutely. The avian flu vaccines, we believe, have been weaponized to cause the disease. Avian flu has been weaponized. We believe that a perfectly harmless virus, which has been with us forever, and there are thousands of viruses that we carry in our bodies that do us no harm and actually exercise the immune system. We need them. Avian flu is one of those. It's a completely harmless virus. We believe that it has been weaponized, that the disease-causing genes of the 1918 so-called Spanish flu, which was itself created under order of President Teddy Roosevelt as a biological weapon. It was probably the first intentionally created biological weapon, and it was disseminated through compulsory vaccination into American troops by Americans starting in Kansas. It was called the Spanish flu because those soldiers were then put on board a troop ship, and they were very ill and very poorly nourished. They were stressed. And then when they got to Spain, the United States government exposed them to poison gases. So they were ill, and they were exposed to poison gases, and they had been inoculated with this biological weapon. And guess what? They became sick. And guess what again? The illness that they developed was, in fact, communicable, and it was spread. But they were in Spain, so it was put out that the disease was a Spanish flu. It was not. It was an American biological weapon which was introduced into American soldiers and disseminated that way.
But they didn't stop with the then. They're still doing that, correct?
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. that's the point, that they took the genome recently at Mount Sinai School of Medicine. They took the genome of the avian flu, of the 1918 pandemic flu, and they introduced it into the harmless avian flu virus. And then, through whatever means, they released it. Now, they are so, these people are so unhappy with the performance of the weaponized avian flu, which has, like SARS, kind of fizzled. SARS was also an intentionally bioengineered coronavirus, we believe, that the Wellcome Foundation of Barrow's Wellcome, which is part of SmithKline Glaxo, one of the great pharmaceutical conglomerates, actually gave grants to scientists in the UK to ask them to figure out why the pandemic H5N1 virus was performing so badly as a pandemic, why it had failed to become pandemic. That was what they were looking to find out. How come we put all this money and effort into creating a pandemic and it's just pooping out on us? If that doesn't chill your blood, you're in a coma. So what we're talking
maybe
about...
Maybe we have somebody that working for us.
So we ask people to become alert, to become concerned, and then to become active, not to become paralyzed. There's a lot that's very, very scary. But knowledge literally makes us free. And the more we know, the more we can push back the forces that are attempting to perpetrate these things on us, because they do, like mushrooms, wither in the light of day. We've had some pretty remarkable success pushing back the FDA when we've shown the light of day on their nefarious doings, and they are nefarious. We're talking about a battle for survival, because these folks don't want us to survive. And by the way, the term useless eater is a very interesting one. I wrote an article called The Killing Fields of Codex, which is available on our site, www.healthfreedomusa.org. And in that article, I pointed out that the term useless eaters goes back to 1922, that long before Hitler came to power, Germans were killing German children, starting with the German Killing Commission, the German Children's Killing Commission in Berlin, that killed children between the ages of 0 and 3 if they had any kind of defect. These were Germans killing German children. Didn't involve Jews, didn't involve gypsies, didn't involve communists. This was killing German children long before Hitler. And that this program evolved with the enthusiastic support, by the way, of the German people into what we know as the concentration camps and the death programs. But this idea of eugenics, which was brought to Germany from Stanford University by John D. Rockefeller, the idea of cleansing the population is no different from the ethnic cleansing in Kosovo or in Darfur. But we are the undesirables being cleansed. That's not okay with me. I'll bet it's not okay with you, and I'll also bet it's not okay with a single one of your listeners. And there are things that we can do about it. Let me give my website again, healthfreedomusa.org. I was talking, if I may, about reclaiming the production of food. If they have weaponized food, then we need to take food back and unweaponize it. And there are several ways to do that. The first, of course, is to buy organic food. And people say, well, it's more expensive. Well, how expensive is cancer? How expensive is infertility? How expensive is MS? Pretty expensive. It's worthwhile spending the money for food, or better yet, growing your own. And one of the things that we are advocating and teaching, we're in Panama, and I'm in Panama to create with General Stubblebine an eco demonstration project called the Valley of the Moon Eco Demonstration Project, where we're teaching people how to reclaim food. We're teaching farmers how to use novel technologies and ancient ways to take back the ability to make a good living and support themselves and their families and feed their communities without using poisoned food. And we're also teaching people how to do what we call urban agriculture, urban intensive agriculture. In a space 4 foot square, you can grow enough fresh organic vegetables at virtually no expense to feed your family for a year with almost no work. And that's pretty remarkable. Why don't we all do it? Because the information isn't out there. So we are teaching that here. We'll be starting a special newsletter for people who want to practice urban intensive agriculture, teaching them how to do it. It's laughably easy, and it's simple and quick and satisfying, and I can't think of anything better for kids than to grow their own food and help feed their family. But it's also a life-saving maneuver. You can do it indoors in the corner of an apartment. It's so simple. So we're doing that. We're also educating governments and educating decision makers on the importance of providing clean, healthy food for their families. We have two agricultural projects in West Africa using novel technologies that are safe and clean and don't pollute anything, so that people can increase their crop yield by up to 6 times. And again, are there too many people in the world? There are too many people who are harmful in the world. But once you start educating women and empowering women, they control the birth rate, and the life of the community improves dramatically. The health of the community improves dramatically, and suddenly, shazam, there are not too many people. There's plenty of resources to go around. There's plenty of land, there's plenty of food, and there's plenty of joy to be had. We don't need starvation. We don't need suffering. The Natural Solutions Foundation created the International Decade of Nutrition to show people how they can solve these problems. Because if we don't do that, if we don't reclaim the production of food, Monsanto will accomplish its goal, which is to own the world's food supply by 2010.
You want to explain a little bit more about, I mean, that's everywhere around the world. I mean like for India and numerous other places, they've already implemented the codex and their inability to grow their food, correct?
Well, almost. Codex Alimentarius is a huge series of a vast number of standards and guidelines, which are totally voluntary. The only reason anybody implements it is for fear of the World Trade Organization sanctions against their country if they don't implement it. Now,
are those codex already, is that already implemented around the world, the codex?
In some regulations, some standards, some guidelines, yes, some standards and guidelines, no. But everything that goes into your mouth, not just nutrients and supplements, is covered by codex. People have to understand that the international trade of food is what codex is about. However, what our foundation did was approach several wonderful lawyers and say, solve the codex problem. Study the World Trade Organization treaties. Study international law. Study all of the codex texts themselves and come up with a legal solution to codex that will protect countries from World Trade Organization sanctions.
And that would be like, that would be like CAFTA and NAFTA and things like that.
CAFTA and NAFTA and the Free Trade Agreements and so on contain boilerplate codex language. The problem is codex. CAFTA and NAFTA are terrible, and I think they should be dissolved immediately, but I'm saying something different. I'm saying that they contain boilerplate language saying we're going to adhere to codex. The question is, what is codex? And what we have done is create a strategy which WTO proofs any country that chooses to use it. It's a two-step strategy, and General Stubblebine and I have traveled the poorest parts of the world, meeting with presidents and ministers of health and ministers of agriculture and so on, helping them to understand that they have a choice, that they do not have to accept codex, they do not have to go along with it, nor do they have to fear the World Trade Organization. We have traveled to the poorest places in the world in order to bring this message, and the message starts this way. Do you realize, Mr. President or Mr. Minister or Mrs. Minister, that Codex Alimentarius is going to kill your people? And they say, yes, we do, but there's nothing we can do about it because the World Trade Organization is going to destroy our economy, our fragile developing economy. And we say, well, not so fast. Here is our book. Here is our video, and we want you to understand, Mr. or Mrs. Minister or President, that Codex Alimentarius is voluntary. And they say, no, 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 it's not voluntary. And we say, oh, yes, it is. You've been lied to. And here's how it works. And we explain the two-step process. We say, if you adopt a different standard of guideline from the one that Codex has laid out and adopted, and it's a higher standard, and if you then pass a law in Ethiopia or Nigeria or India or wherever and say, here's how we do it in our country. We ban these pesticides. We prevent the GMO seed, whatever it is. Then your country can stand up in the World Trade Organization and say, we have followed the requirements. We are not subject to codex in this area. And by the way, then, Mr. Minister or Mrs. Minister or President, you can sell your higher quality clean products into codex compliant countries, and the World Trade Organization has to back you up, so you have an enormous trade advantage. Well, we created that that information flow. And then we took it on the road. General Stubblebine and I have traveled, as I said, to the poorest places in the world for close to 4 years without stopping. Then we decided that we had to do something else. We got that information out. Now we had to show farmers around the world how to reclaim the production of food and take it back from the industrializers of the food supply, the people who are weaponizing the food. That's Big Pharma, Big Chema, Big Agribiz, Big Biotech, and Big Medica. All of this information is available and much more on the website healthfreedomusa.org. And when people go there, I hope that they will sign up for the free, safe, secure Health Freedom Action e-alerts. And then when they get those, that they'll disseminate them like crazy, because in this freedom game, it's a numbers issue. If you have the numbers, you will win the battle. If you don't have the numbers, it doesn't matter how right you are, you will lose the battle. Numbers are what we need. Numbers of people who are willing to ride that freedom mouse and become our mighty mouse warriors, because this is a winnable war. Everybody eats, but every person on the planet knows that clean food is necessary for themselves and their children, their mothers, their fathers, their brothers. And so it's a passionate issue. Nobody wants to give dirty food to their kids.
Does water come under this?
Say again?
Does water come under this?
Is water...
Water.
Water. Oh, water. Oh, yes, indeed. I'm sorry. We're having a little bit of trouble with the clarity of the sound. Water is enormously important. First of all, in terms of codex, water, bottled water, and drinking water are covered by codex standards and guidelines. Second of all, fluoridation. Now, have you covered fluoridation in previous programs? Do your listeners know about fluoride as a central nervous system poison?
Go ahead. It's been brushed over, but I'd go ahead and review it.
Sure. Fluoride has a history in water use that tells the whole story. In the Gulag, the political prisons that were really death prisons for the political prisoners in Stalin's Russia, it was found that the political prisoners were pretty hard to deal with. They were very feisty and very oppositional, and they really had nothing to lose, so they were very, very difficult to control and to coerce. It was discovered that if fluoride was added to the water, they became tractable. They became completely complacent. You could do anything you wanted. They lost the will to resist. They didn't care. And that was pretty interesting. So the Germans, who were at that time allies of the Russians, came to the Gulag, and they learned this technique of prisoner management. And they said, well, that's pretty cool. So when the slave labor camps and the death camps were set up, the water in those facilities was fluoridated as well. And, of course, that made it easier to deal with the slaves and deal with the death camp prisoners. Well, somewhere along after halfway through the Second World War, late in the war, the German population began saying, hey, wait a minute, we were supposed to win this sucker. How come we're losing the war and we're suffering privations and we're not being welcomed marching through the world as the heroes that we were told that we would be? And so the German high command said, oops, the natives are getting restless, and they started fluoridating the water of the German population. And lo and behold, the German population said, oh, yeah, well, okay, whatever. Heil Hitler. And after the war, the fluoridation experts were brought where? They were brought to the United States. And the entire fiction of fluoride and tooth decay was created. Here's how it was done. In Salt Lake City and in Newburgh, New York, a group of children were selected to receive fluoridated water. Now, you can ask about the ethics of experimenting on children with a known toxin, but hey, remember these scientists were the German genocidal, quote, scientists, the murder doctors and scientists. So it was perfectly okay with them, and apparently it was quite okay with the FDA. So these children were experimented upon, and they were given fluoridated water for anywhere between 9 months and a year. At the end of 9 months in a year, or a year, depending on the experimental design, those children were examined in light of bone health, cancer incidence, tooth decay, et cetera, diabetes incidence, and so on. And it was found in both Newburgh, New York, and Salt Lake City that the children who had not been fluoridated had fewer tooth decay incidents. They had less cancer, fewer bone breaks, less diabetes. They were healthier, far healthier. And the diseases that they didn't have are life-threatening diseases like childhood leukemia. Well, those findings were published, but they were published with the headings switched so that the fluoridated children looked like they were healthier, and the unfluoridated children looked like they had not gotten the protection of this new agent. The FDA was forced to review the original data about 5 years ago by the Union of Concerned Scientists, a very good organization. And they said, well, look at that. It is true. The children who were not fluoridated had less cancer, less tooth decay, less bone breaks, less diabetes, less this, less that. But we still endorse the total fluoridation of the water supply in the United States. Now, that in itself is crazy, because what happened was when this single set of studies was published based on what allegedly happened to a group of children, the FDA then incomprehensibly said, okay, now that we see that children who have fluoride in their water do better for anywhere between 9 months and a year, and of course we know that those data were reversed, we're going to recommend, you ready? I hope you have your intellectual seat for this one. We're going to recommend fluoridating the entire water supply of the entire U.S. population. That's pregnant people, old people, young people, people with cancer, people with MS, people with neurological diseases, people with lead poisoning, whatever. We're going to fluoridate everybody based on these two corrupted studies. Why? Why would you do that? Well, maybe, just maybe, because it makes people tractable, because it makes people easy to control, because you can do pretty much anything you want to them. Maybe the reason that we put fluoride in toothpaste and the reason that we spray fluoride on food at 3,300 parts per million. By the way, all of the negative aspects of fluoride were documented at 1 part per million, but 3,300 parts per million is used as a food spray by Dow Chemical. Maybe the reason we do that is because it makes it easier for us to do anything else that we want to the American people.
Well, isn't fluoride also something that if it's taken in conjunction with some other kind of poison, it kind of accelerates the...
Absolutely. I was just getting there. Thank you. Fluoride is synergistically poisonous. That means that the two poisons together are more poisonous than either alone. Fluoride is synergistically poisonous with aluminum. Now, when you get a shot, a vaccination, you are getting aluminum hydroxide and fluoride. And these two compounds in your brain, along with the mercury, are thousands of times more toxic than the same amount of either fluoride or aluminum. And you might say, well, why would anybody inject aluminum into my brain when aluminum is associated with Alzheimer's, which is now epidemic? If you are 80 years old, you have a 50% chance of having Alzheimer's within the next year and a half to 2 years. If you have 5 flu shots, you have a lifetime dose of 5 flu shots, you have a 5 times greater chance of having Alzheimer's. And by the way, in New Jersey, a flu shot starting at 6 months and then once a year until you reach 18 is now mandatory. I repeat, 5 flu shots means you have a 5-fold increase in Alzheimer's disease.
Let me ask this. Okay, if you're saying that they really, you really don't have, the viruses are really kind of not, isn't real, is kind of what you're, I interpret what you're saying. And if you're getting all these vaccinations, whether it's hepatitis B or the DPT or you name it, then ultimately what you're getting is just little doses that add up that are toxic.
They're very toxic. Now, some of the organisms are real, but the reason that we have immune systems is to deal with them. And hepatitis B is a very good example. Hepatitis B is a self-limited, non-threatening disease. Hepatitis B is primarily confined to people who are having unsafe sex, using dirty needles, or who are handling contaminated blood, people who work in emergency rooms and so on. Most of the newborn infants I know do not fall into those categories. Why give children hepatitis B? By the way, the manufacturer of the hepatitis B vaccine that we are giving our newborn babies who have no immune system developed yet, the manufacturer of that vaccine is standing trial for murder in France because the hepatitis B vaccine kills people. It kills them by delivering a leukemia virus to them. And in many, many, many cases, it kills them by delivering the contaminants that are identified as the causative agents of HIV. For instance, the New York City homosexual community was targeted with a special batch of hepatitis B vaccine that helped to kill them because it gave them HIV. How did it do that? Very, very well. Why did it do that? Intentionally. And that story is, in fact, not news. That's an old story. It's, of course, been not very well covered by the mainstream press, which is really what we call at the Natural Solutions Foundation the media of mass deception.
But say like if when we were young, we got so many vaccinations, and now it seems like they've increased that many fold on the amount of vaccinations. So ultimately, to me, they're aiming to break down the immune system. Correct.
Exactly. They're aiming to break down the immune system. And when you consider what's in these vaccines, okay, mercury, let's talk a little bit about the history of thimerosal, which is 50% metallic mercury by weight. Thimerosal was and is made by Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly tested it on 11 patients with meningitis. Now, meningitis is a very, very serious disease. Of these 11 patients, 100% died. I'll repeat that. 11 patients received thimerosal injections. 100% of them died. Eli Lilly reported to the FDA that thimerosal was safe. Again, put your intellectual seatbelt on because this one's a real wowzer. That thimerosal was safe because those patients would have died anyway. So nobody died from thimerosal. The FDA, which is totally controlled by the industries that it supposedly regulates, accepted this idiotic non-logic and said, great, nobody died from the thimerosal. They all died from something else. So thimerosal must be safe. And it was on the basis of that study that thimerosal entered the vaccine recipe. Now, thimerosal is used supposedly as a preservative. It doesn't work.
Okay. So when you have these cocktail type injections where you have two or three different diseases it's supposedly aiming at, then you're just increasing it that much more. And would you also give some of the symptoms of what that does that maybe people should be, watching out for?
Well, how about autism? How about cancer? How about neurodegenerative diseases? How about destroying the immune system so that it becomes vulnerable to anything that comes by. How about diabetes? One of the things that is included in a typical vaccine is polysorbate 80. Polysorbate 80 is a chemical that is known to produce infertility. So we're back around again to taking away the ability of us useless eaters to reproduce.
How about aspartame, too?
Aspartame and monosodium glutamate, which is an excitotoxin. If it's in the body, what it does is drive the nervous system until it basically collapses. Even more ominously is something called adjuvants. Adjuvants are substances which drive the immune system to produce more and more antibodies. Now, I want to point out that the basic thesis of a vaccine injection is that that will cause the body to produce circulating antibodies. And those circulating antibodies will protect against the disease if the organism shows up, the virus or the bacteria. The fact is that the circulating antibody protection hypothesis has never, ever, ever been proven. And the way vaccines are tested in pseudoscientific clinical trials is to test one vaccine against another vaccine at an ineffective dose. The whole thing is crooked as a $3 bill. And so you have aspartame, which as we know is a neurotoxin, and you have monosodium glutamate, which is associated with childhood diabetes, and you have formaldehyde, and if anybody thinks that injecting formaldehyde is good for them, step right up and we'll eliminate you from the face of the earth by injecting formaldehyde into your bloodstream. It's crazy. And we have polysorbate 80, and we have genetically modified components, and we have adjuvants. Adjuvants irritate the nervous system. The reason that we have Gulf War syndrome is because of the adjuvant called squalene, S-Q-U-A-L-E-N-E, in the anthrax vaccine, the experimental anthrax vaccine, which the United States military is now reinstating as a mandatory vaccination.
What is squalene?
Squalene is a fat or an oil which is part of the brain. When you introduce squalene, two things happen. And by the way, squalene is non-toxic to eat. It's non-toxic to breathe. It's non-toxic to rub on your skin. It's part of many skin creams. So it's non-toxic to have contact with as a hair cream. It's perfectly okay. But when this fat or oil called squalene is introduced into the bloodstream as an injection, it turns on the immune system, which makes bazillions of antibodies to whatever else it is that it's supposed to be making antibodies to. And that supposedly provides superior protection. In fact, it doesn't. As I said, that's never been proven to work. But much, much, much more concerningly, the squalene also induces the immune system to produce antibodies to squalene. Now, squalene is one of the major components of the white matter of the brain. And so the body has now been instructed to start making antibodies which will attack the brain. That looks a whole lot like Gulf War syndrome. It looks a whole lot like MS. It looks a whole lot like muscular dystrophy. It looks a whole lot like Alzheimer's. And so now what we have is the brain being attacked by the body. And you might say, well, that effect wears off after a little while, right? No. Squalene is the perfect adjuvant. It never quits. Once you inject squalene into the body just keeps on attacking the body until there's nobody left, until the person dies. It's called Gulf War syndrome. Now, the same squalene adjuvant that was used in this experimental Vaccine A that Gary Matsumoto writes about in his book called Vaccine A, that same adjuvant is now being used in virtually all second and third generation vaccines. That means you take your kid for the regular checkup and the kid gets vaccines. Those vaccines, in addition to the metals and the formaldehyde and the stealth viruses that the FDA has known about for 40 years, in addition to all of that, you're also giving your kid squalene. And that squalene starts the immune system on a downward destruction curve, and who knows where it stops. I would advise, if you have a child and a syringe is coming toward your child, run. Do not walk to the nearest exit. If that means homeschooling your kid, homeschool your kid. If that means moving to another state, move to another state. If it means moving to another country, get out. Because what you're doing when you get, and that's a very, very strong statement, when you give your kid a vaccine or when you take a vaccine yourself, you're playing a game of chemical roulette, and there's only a very, very, very steep and narrow path back from the pit that you can slide into with your child or with yourself. Is it worth it? No, because the protection that you get is, in fact, illusory. You don't get protection from the diseases. I've written a book, I've written an article that's also available on our website, healthfreedomusa.org, called Coming Soon to a Police Station Near You, The Syringe of Death. Pretty strong words, but it's based on my horrified realization of what the science does not say and what the science does say. What it does not say is that vaccines work, that they're safe, or they're effective. What it does say is that they are incredibly dangerous. And with the current vaccine schedule, early and often and deadly, what we're looking at is an absolute tragedy that parents can avoid and that people can avoid for themselves. All of this information is on our website, healthfreedomusa.org. We also have a couple of stores associated with the website, and those stores have organic products, and they have services and products that we think are very useful for people. And we ask people to shop at those stores because this is not something that happens without cost. You know, it costs money to travel to Codex meetings. It costs money to do the research. It costs money to make the DVDs. It costs money to travel to the lectures. It costs money to set up the eco-demonstration project here in Panama. And
there's not a lot of people like you traveling to all these, is there? You know, representing the common person that
There are very few. In fact, Codex is staffed by professional bureaucrats who basically are very busy and don't get what's going on, and one of our jobs there is to inform them, and by industry, supposedly NGO, a non-government organization people, and by industry people who sit on the delegation of the United States. The United States carries with it people from Big Pharma, Big Chema, Big Agribiz, Big Biotechna, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, etc., and they tell the United States what they want, and the United States does it. And then they bull their way through until we got there. So we got there, and we started creating what I call the Coalition of the Unwilling. And you know what? Things changed. So, for instance, it is now not possible, not legal, on international trade products to put fluoride in baby formula. And the reason is because of us. We face down the United States by giving the poor nations of the world, the undeveloped nations of the world, the scientific dossier that they don't have the resources to put together to allow them to oppose the United States. And we prevented fluoride from being added to formulas for babies. That's WE, the Natural Solutions Foundation. If anybody thinks that fluoride is good for babies, they should check out the American Dental Association, which finally changed its policy 9 weeks after this triumph in Thailand at a codex meeting that we brought about. The American Dental Association said infants up to the age of 1 year should not have their formula mixed with fluoridated water because it is so damaging to them. You know, the science is there. The public perception is always controlled by the pseudoscience, the junk science of the corporations. But the science is really there, and we ask people to take action and to support what we're doing by disseminating and by donating, of course. We have many, many, many programs going on simultaneously because health freedom is threatened on many, many levels.
What made you pick Panama, and why would Panama be stable?
that's a good question. I'm so glad you asked it. Well, first of all, we have looked for over 3.5 years around the world for the perfect site to create the eco demonstration project that will be the parent for other eco demonstration projects. We chose Panama because the climate in the highlands, not down at the coast, but in the highlands, is temperate and is spring-like all year long. It's like spring in the Northeast, and it's just magnificent. We chose Panama because the fertility of the soil is almost impossible to describe. We chose Panama because that fertile soil, is volcanic paramagnetic soil, which has the most intense health-conferring benefits. We chose Panama because from sea level to the highlands, which can be accomplished, that climb can be accomplished in about 45 minutes when you go from the city of David to the town of Volcan, where our project is located. You pass through the ecosystem ranges, the climactic ranges of conditions that 95% of the world's food is produced in. So if you have a farm at a lower elevation, you can teach people from Thailand. If you have a farm at a higher elevation, you can teach people from Norway or from the Midwest of the United States. There's an incredible microclimate diversity. Panama is economically stable. The canal has geopolitical significance that's hard to imagine until you see it. If you imagine a knot in a rope, a great big knot, with China pulling on one side and the United States and Europe pulling on the other side, that knot is the Panama Canal, and neither side is going to allow it to budge 1 inch. Costa Rica, which has lots of organic farming, does not have that canal, that knot in the rope to stabilize it. Panama is an immensely important economic center. Huge amounts of money come into Panama, corporate money and so on. Panama is a crossroads for business, so that more and more international corporations are putting their international headquarters here. So there's a community of interest in stabilizing Panama. Panama has a very large Chinese population, and Panama is wonderfully open, so that people mix and mingle. They've been doing that for generations. People in the same family can be Chinese and Latino and European and black and white and Indian. So it's a very open, inclusive society. Spanish is a language that most people from Europe or North America can learn. I lived for 18 months in Thailand, and I can tell you that there is no possible way that I could ever master the language. It's tonal. I couldn't hear the tones. Panama is a delightful country to live in many, many ways. Panama City is a big city like any other big city. I don't find it particularly appealing, but it's useful to have a big city for many purposes. And up here in the Highlands, we have a perfectly exquisite environment that is easy to live in. You know, you don't need winter coats, you don't need a snow shovel, which, of course, I miss because I like skiing and snow. But it's easy living. You don't get distracted with kind of surviving in a difficult climate like Lapland.
I was going to say, this is KHENLPFM 106 FM radio, 106.9 Salida. And when you're... what is the difference between the elevation between the highest mountains there and the ocean there?
We're about a mile high. Okay. Earlier today, I was in David, which is 50 feet above sea level. 45 minutes later, I was back in the temperate, exquisite highlands filled with flowers and colors and so on. It's just quite wonderful. By the way, for people who are interested in the Panama eco-demonstration project, and it is very interesting, and I invite you to come visit. You can learn more at a website devoted to it, which is www.naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. That's one word, naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. We are teaching people to reclaim food, but we'll also have a seminar center, a medical center for natural medicine, which is becoming harder and harder to find and will become harder and harder to find as the big pharma juggernaut takes out natural medicine, which is what's intended. But Panama has laws that say that natural medicine is the preferred type of medicine, especially for the indigenous people, but also for everybody else.
How is Agenda 21 affected there? Are anything that you note of noteworthy?
Panama is very interesting. We believe that, by the way, there are no chemtrails here, or very, very few. We have seen a chemtrail, but it was over Costa Rica, not here. We believe that Panama is kind of a cutout, a carved-out safe haven for the depopulation and for Agenda 21. We believe that the people who are perpetrating these insanities probably have selected Panama as a place where they might want to be before they take other measures, if they have to, before they go into their well-equipped, enormous underground caverns. When they decide that the rest of the world is disposable. We think that Panama is a protected place for a lot of reasons. And people sometimes say to me, well, do you really want to have those people as your neighbors? And my response is, I don't really want to die in a concentration camp. And I'm sure that you've had people talking about the concentration camps, the detention centers on your program.
We really haven't gotten into it that much, and it hasn't been that we've avoided it. It just hasn't. We haven't gotten into it real heavily, you know.
Maybe we can do another chat, and we can talk a little bit more about that. It's a huge topic, and most Americans are not aware, although the information is still on the internet, that there are in fact enormous detention centers in the United States, and that they are staffed but empty. People don't build detention centers and staff them unless they're intending to use them, and it's a pretty important topic. We're interested in helping people have the truth, and then they can take action. Everything that we say is either documented or identified as speculation by words like we believe, we think, we understand, it's our conclusion that. But if we don't say that, then we're talking about things that are documented. For instance, one thing that's documented is that the World Health Organization is not your friend. The World Health Organization has been found guilty by the Supreme Court of the Philippines of involuntarily sterilizing at least 3 million Filipinas using a vaccine that supposedly was for tetanus, but in fact was sterilization. And that same vaccine system has been used since 1974 in the third world country where people have brown skins. Thailand is currently being used in Brazil, Argentina, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Tanzania, Kenya, Ghana, and a whole host of other African, Central and South American and Asian countries. And that's consistent with the World Health Organization and United Nations and U.S. stated, documented policy that a sustainable planet, God help us, has 80 to 90% fewer people than it currently does.
Well, then it's obvious that war is one of their tactics.
Say again?
It's obvious that war is one of their tactics then.
War and depleted uranium and vaccinations and weaponized food, these are very certainly tactics.
And so it would be foolish for us to even think that they would ever want to cut back on war if they're so intent on reducing the population of the planet.
War is almost as profitable as the pharmaceutical industry. Not quite, but almost as profitable as pharmaceuticals and disease. So, of course, they don't want to cut back on war. Why would they want to do that? There's so much money and there's so much gain from a genocidalist's point of view. Now, if that sounds harsh, I urge your listeners to take a look at the documentation. What I'm saying is documented. What I'm saying is substantiated by documents from these organizations themselves.
An interesting thing I heard your husband say on an interview I was listening to today, you know, and he's not the first one I've heard this from, and with his background, I consider that pretty significant, you know, is finding out that what they were fighting for wasn't what they had any idea they were in there fighting, correct?
Right. These people were deceived. I was an anti-war protester, and I wanted nothing to do with somebody like my husband, who served in the military with great distinction and luster. Maybe your listeners don't know that my husband is Major General Albert Stubblebine, who was the head of the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Forces. And back in the Vietnam days, for instance, if I had met him, I would have spat on him, and he would have probably put me in prison. So we were not seeing things eye to eye. I always say we both fought in the Vietnam War. He fought in the jungle, and I fought on the streets to bring him home. But the point is that these men and women were deceived. They were lied to. They were given a kind of fabricated fiction that they bought into hook, line, and sinker. My husband had a father who was also a distinguished West Point graduate and military career officer. And both father and son were men, in my judgment, once I met them and got over my stereotypes about how horrible they had to be because they were in the military, they were men who were serving with deep, deep reverence for the ideals that they had been taught. The problem is that the ideals were not real. Doesn't mean that the Constitution isn't real. It means that those who have perverted the Constitution have made it meaningless.
It's been rather interesting in doing some of the interviews I have done, and one of them has been a special services person who was an assassin. And I'll tell you, after listening to his story and seeing some of the things that he's written, I think he had more integrity than many of them that he had to answer to.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's perhaps a story for an interview with my husband rather than with me, but when he touched the deep, deep, deep corruption of the government and the system, and when he began to get near the edges of the truth, he was suddenly out of the Army after a 32-year lustrous career. He suddenly found himself a retired 2-star general, even though he was on the 3-star general promotion list. I didn't know him at that time, but I do know that meeting him, you see that this is a man of great integrity. The problem is he was fighting for something that was a fiction.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us are.
Well, that's why truth is so important, and I urge people to visit our site, healthfreedomusa.org, and to find out what's true based on the resonance. Your body will tell you what's true if you listen to it. Your body will say, hey, this doesn't feel right, or somehow that doesn't ring true. One of the interesting things about being in the position that we've chosen to be in, and we sold our house and we closed our practice in order to do this, is we get attacked continually. And we are constantly being lied about. We are constantly having the most horrible things said about us. And we simply say, okay, look at what we do. Look at what other people are not bothering to do. The people who attack us are accomplishing nothing except attacking us. And then ask yourself what feels right. Ask yourself what your internal wisdom takes you to and find out more. Right now, in my mailbox, my private email box, I have 12,273 unopened emails.
Oh, no. Whoa.
And that's because people write to me, and I try to answer every single email. Obviously, I'm a little bit behind. But we ask people to use their own wisdom, because I believe in the wisdom that people carry with them, their innate wisdom. I believe in the innate healing capacity of the human being. I believe in the innate ability of people to sort out truth from lies if they let themselves. Somebody like General Stoppelbein didn't let himself do that until he was already out of the military, and he began looking at the conflicting information, just as I found when I started looking at the conflicting information with an open mind about, for instance, vaccination. I was horrified to discover that I had been lied to and that I had bought into the lie. So I said, whoa, I got to know more about this, and I dived in. And I studied and studied and studied, and I came up for air saying, oh, my God, this has all been a lie.
Right.
It's all been a lie. What else is a lie? Because that's what happens. Once you start to see the truth, you can't stop seeing it.
One other thing I'm curious about is, what do you think about the new medical system that they're trying to implement here? Are you up on that?
When you say the new medical system,
The programs that they're trying to implement for health care in the country.
Well, first of all, let's start out with the fact that there is no health care in the United States.
Well, that's an oxymoron.
It is. There is illness care. Health does not produce income, and the entire medical system, every aspect of it, is designed to produce income, whether the providers of care, who are no longer called doctors, they're called providers, whether the salespeople, the doctors, know it or not, because doctors are the most deluded group going. Let me tell you my take on the medical system. Medical education system is a classical cult. You take young, susceptible people who want approval, and you tell them how wonderfully smart they are, and then you abuse them continually, 24 hours a day. You abuse them with protein deprivation, sleep deprivation, emotional abuse, and that emotional abuse is only lifted or made better when they get the approval of their seniors, and as they rise in the ranks, then they get to reproduce the cult behavior by abusing those below them. And as with any emotionally exhausted animal, whether it's Pavlov's dogs or whether it's medical students, they then affiliate with the aggressor. That is, their emotional loyalty goes to the people who have abused them, and they grow up to be abusers.
Isn't that amazing? And that is so much through system. It's a system throughout our country, and here we are trying to break people of domestic violence and whatever, and we're raising them in it. The medical profession's an extreme, but you find various flavors of it in every aspect and profession out there.
I don't think it's extreme. I think it's exactly the way the system works.
Well, it is extreme for protecting the human psyche. They're breaking them.
Oh, absolutely. But I think that that's part of the deal. You know, the entire educational system was created with the support of John D. Rockefeller and John Dewey, who used to be one of my heroes but is no longer, now that I understand the subtext, to create workers for the factories who couldn't think, who couldn't question, and who would be obedient to whatever they were told to do. Well, that's kind of like medical school, isn't it? It's just that they start out with a whole bunch of high IQ selectees. Well, that doesn't guarantee that you're thinking. It just guarantees that you can think. And most doctors are constitutionally able to think, but educationally disabled from the process of intensive thought. Think about the last time you tried to have a conversation with a doctor. If the doctor felt that they were expert in the subject, they wouldn't listen.
When I started reading up on how you break a person down and make multiple personalities and things of that sort, and being in the profession that you were in, the first thing that came to me later was that profession came out of something that was meant to break people instead of heal them. Does that sound?
Talking about psychiatry or medicine?
Well, psychiatry at this point, but medicine.
I don't believe that psychiatry came out of brainwashing. I think that psychiatry learned a whole lot from brainwashing. And there's a very interesting book that's been reissued called Battle for the Mind by Sargent. I read the book when it came out 40 years ago, and I thought it was a most informative book. And then recently a friend who was arriving here from the United States said, here, I think you'd really enjoy this book, and I realized that I had read it 40 years before. In the book, they talk about Pavlov's dogs, and they talk about the fact that if you exhaust the emotional capacity of a dog, and different dogs have different points at which they become emotionally disabled. At that point, however long it took to get there, the dog does several things. First of all, it becomes paralyzed psychologically and physically. Okay, it becomes ill. And second of all, it then affiliates with the abusing staff and the staff that it used to like, the people that it used to respond to in a positive way. It no longer does, but it does respond positively to the people that have tortured it. And we're talking about torture in Pavlov's laboratories, not just feeding food, but real torture. The next thing that happens is that new patterns of behavior can be introduced once that state of protective inhibition is reached. And at that point, you have a new personality for the dog. The new personality is stable and cannot be eradicated like the old personality was. Now, you look at religion, you look at cultural conditioning, you look at any number of conditioning attempts, and you look at psychiatry with the drugs that are used. And by the way, I have been a non-drug psychiatrist for my entire career.
So you don't like SSRIs, huh?
Oh, I do not, nor do I like the fact that 90% of the Ritalin prescribed in the world is prescribed to U.S. children. And I have been writing about the evils and dangers of prescribing medication for children while their brains are developing. By the way, the longest study that I know of in terms of developmental impact of a psychiatric drug is 13 weeks.
And don't they have fluoride in some of those, too?
Say again?
Don't they have fluoride in some of those psychiatric medicines?
You know, I could hear the word psychiatric medicine, but
Don't they have fluoride in some of those?
Yes, they do. Fluoxetine, for instance, has fluoride. These medicines are a toxic brew that have been poorly studied, and when they're used in combination, have been not studied at all. And when you give them to developing brains, God only knows what they do. Nobody knows what they do. We do know that all psychiatric medications, cause long-term irreversible damage. Those are big words, long-term irreversible damage. Yet children as young as 18 months are being placed on psychiatric medication. Why? Because doctors are told by the pharmaceutical industry that the more drugs they give, the better. Eli Lilly just agreed to pay billions of dollars for its Zyprexa scam, the Neurontin scandal, in which a failed antipsychotic drug, anti-seizure drug, was used for pain, not because it works, but because it sells. And billions of prescriptions have been written. Well, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars have been spent on this completely bogus presumption that Neurontin is a drug for pain because it wasn't working any too well for seizures. This is atrocious. These people who have perpetrated this and the unthinking doctors who have gone along with the detail person's whispered instructions in their ears, try this for this condition, try this for that condition, these people ought to be sent to jail. And in fact, in Poland, where the avian flu vaccine, which we believe has been weaponized, the avian flu vaccine that is now stockpiled by the United States government, 100 million doses at $15 a pop, and this vaccine was made in China. This vaccine was tried in an informal trial in Poland. About 320 vagrants were each given a dollar for the permission to inject the vaccine, the avian flu vaccine. 11 of them dropped dead right on the spot. That's a pretty high percentage.
And I was going to ask if it had a shelf life on it.
Well, they didn't. Another 220 became so cataclysmically ill that they had to be taken to the emergency room immediately. And the two doctors and four nurses who carried out this informal trial are standing trial in Poland for murder. Now, that's the same vaccine that is now one of the vaccines. Many, many vaccines are stockpiled for the so-called avian flu. That's the same vaccine that Sanofi Aventis manufactured in China and brought to the United States, to the Sweetwater, Pennsylvania plant to be put into individual syringes, and which the United States government has said they will vaccinate, quote, every man, woman, and child in the United States with, and I quote, starting with those who want it.
Okay, the one other thing that I've thought maybe we should touch on is, what is your take on what is going on? I mean, there are those in the country that thinks everything is fine and dandy and we're going to have a lot of change and it's going to be for the best and that sort. What is your take on, I mean, because that's part of the country. Then there's the other side of the country that seems to be a little bit more alerted after listening to the Colin Powell and what Joe Biden had mentioned was going to happen around this period in time. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
I certainly am. Many years ago, during the apartheid period in South Africa. There was a book, an absolutely magnificent and gut-wrenching book that was written called Cry the Beloved Country. And as you were asking what I think about the situation, the phrase that was going through my head was Cry the Beloved Country. The United States is a country that I love. It's certainly a country that General Stubblebine loves, but it's a country that has been captured, that has been perverted and polluted by the fake patriots and by the globalists and by the people who have captured the political process cynically and devastatingly. And those people have created, in my mind, a political theater. That political theater changes parties every 8 years dutifully. That political theater is one that presents us with puppets. I mean, no one could take George W. Bush seriously as a capable national or international leader. Clearly, the puppet masters had run out of wood, so they were using sawdust. This new president is attractive. He's appealing. He's articulate. He, unlike the president of the last 8 years, actually speaks and apparently thinks in complete sentences. He's a constitutional scholar who should know better than what he's planning to do, apparently by the appointments that he's making. And he is a black man with a Muslim set of ties. And I say, how wonderful that we have elected a president who is not of the usual race and has a different religious connection, tie in his family. And then I say how tragic that this man is just another iteration of the puppet. I do not believe that he is anything other than an operative who has been placed to carry out the same programs. I do not believe that he... Look at his appointments. Vilsack for Secretary of Agriculture, a true tragedy. This is a Monsanto man, start to finish. The Secretary of State, Hillary Rodham Clinton, I cannot begin to tell you how horrified and terrified I am by that, because she, unlike George W. Bush, is much brighter, and the agenda is very frightening. You look at each of the appointees and you see same old, and you see worse same old than possibly than before. Where is the loyalty? Where is the change? Where is the fresh view? I don't know. I'd love to be wrong. Pray God that I am wrong.
Well, Ed, and there are those that, you know, are seeing quite the potential police state ratcheting down the...
Absolutely. Unless the way that I will believe that I'm wrong and rejoice in that error is if this president, within the next month, overturns the 1,000 signing statements and the innumerable executive orders that have subverted the Constitution and the will of the Congress and the people of the United States. If he does that, if he eliminates the military commissions of the Warren Commission Act, if he eliminates warrantless wiretapping and FISA, if he bans genetically modified foods and requires scientific investigation, as Dennis Kucinich is asking him to do, before a food can be introduced into the food system. If he turns away from mandatory vaccination, which, by the way, he has said several times he believes in, if he actually acts in a way that introduces change, I will celebrate and I will publicly declare that I was wrong and that I am joyously happy to have been wrong. But it's not looking good.
Well, I guess I should put a wind it down here. We did go over, but I did want to, you know, since we finally did get a hold of you and we could connect here, I kind of wanted to make as much use of the time as I could, and appreciate your coming on and give.
It's my pleasure. I want to give our website another time, if
okay.
I may.
Go ahead.
www.healthfreedomusa.org. That's healthfreedomusa.org. And if you're interested in the Panama Project, and I certainly hope that you are, in reclaiming the production of food and knowing more about it and how to engage in urban intensive agriculture in the apartment corner that you have or your backyard or whatever, then the site for you is www.naturalsolutionsfoundation.org, naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. And one other thing, if you're worried about the fact that your IRA or your 401k funds may be stolen by the U.S. government looking at the last pool of available money in the United States, and indeed they may be, then you need to go to naturalsolutionsfoundation.org, because we have a program that has been approved by several U.S. IRA custodians for putting your IRA offshore legally and out of the reach of the greedy, hungry federal government, which wants to take your IRA and put it into treasury bonds and, quote, guarantee you a 3% rate of return backed by what? The fiscal sovereignty and security of the United States government? Excuse me, I don't think so. So that's a very, very interesting program. And I urge you to go to healthfreedomusa.org to find out about what you can do to keep your health freedom free, and to go to naturalsolutions.org to find out what you can do to help reclaim the production of food and to keep your retirement funds intact.
Well, let me just go ahead and say support for Cahan and Truth Quest was brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Home Property, Inc.'s Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from the historic downtown Salida. Find out more at coloradohomeproperties.com or call Kevin at 719-207-0858. And the views expressed on this program are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Cahan staff, volunteers, and board of directors. And again, Dr. LeBeau, I really appreciate you coming on and your patience with me trying to get my technical issues straightened out. But I think I have this down now.
It's been a great pleasure, and thank you for having me. I hope you'll have me back so we can talk about other things. And I do hope you'll send me an email with a link so I can put this up on our website, healthfreedomusa.org.
Okay. Well, thank you, and I will do so. Good night.
Thanks. Good night.